And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome back to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Everybody and welcome. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I'm glad to be back. Glad to be back talking Potter. And it's quite befitting, actually, that we're at the Yule Ball, and as we are recording this right now, it's the 21st of December.
21st of December. Actually the winter solstice, the week of Christmas. That's right, Blake. So here we are, chapter 23 of The Goblet of Fire, the Yule Ball. Snow was falling thickly upon the castle and its grounds now. The pale blue Beauxbatons carriage looked like a large, chilly, frosted pumpkin next to the iced gingerbread house that was Hagrid's cabin, while the Durmstrang ship's portholes were glazed with ice, the rigging white with frost. The house elves down in the kitchen were outdoing themselves with a series of rich, warming stews and savory puddings, and only Fleur Delacour seemed to be able to find anything to complain about. I just loved this description of frosted pumpkins and Hagrid's cabin looking like an iced gingerbread house. You know, we think of all the images that we get to see in Hogsmeade down at Universal's, you know, land. And really, that's what you think of. So much of Harry Potter takes place outside of the snow, outside of the winter, but there's just something so cozy and so special when it comes to Christmas at Hogwarts.
Yeah, you know, I actually wrestle with this a little bit. When I think of Hogwarts, I kind of think more of Halloween. Ooh. And I don't know if that's something that is an affect like of you and I, because we go all in on Harry Potter and Hogwarts and everything during Halloween.
We do.
But I think the vast majority, like the consensus probably thinks of Christmas when it comes to Hogwarts and that setting. Mary, personally, what do you feel like? What do you associate Hogwarts with when it comes to these?
Other
than Flag Day. Flag Day is an obvious one. I get it. Clearly.
Obviously, yes.
But no, which one do you associate them with?
Both, honestly, because they go, you know, the author goes into such detail when it comes to Halloween, when it comes to Christmas and the decor. We don't necessarily have anything big when it comes to Easter or to break, you know, or spring break or anything like that. But when it comes to, there is no spring break. But when it comes to Halloween and to Christmas, they're all in. It is funny that there's never really a big New Year's celebration because so many of these students are still at the school for New Year's. You'd be thinking that maybe they'd be doing something big then. I also find it quite interesting that being that they're witches and wizards, that they don't make a bigger deal out of the solstice itself.
Yeah,
and that isn't something that is necessarily woven into the literature. But I think that this just really harkens to the author's feelings of probably loving Christmas a lot, probably, you know, enjoying Halloween. So to me, I believe that the holiday season begins at Labor Day in September. Halloween continues to be the holiday season. I know a lot of people think holiday season is Christmas season, but I'm like, if you have special decor and special candy, then it's the holiday season. So that for me starts Halloween definitely through Valentine's Day, even St. Patrick's Day. I'm here for it. I'm here for the holidays. All right. So That being said, we want to thank all of you for, you know, listening to the Potterverse, whether in a podcast app, through our jointhenerdclan.com website, through Facebook or our YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. Thank you ever so much, particularly to our friends at jointhenerdclan.com. Many of you have already begun to receive your holiday cards and gifts from us, and we want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts. If you have not yet joined as a patron of Blake and Ours, maybe you might think about doing it for the new year for 2022. It helps keep this mom and pop podcast going. And we do appreciate that we have been a little quiet recently. We've had quarantining for our kids, and we've had Blake being quite ill. So it's been a lot of health related things in our family recently, but we're excited to be back, especially for Christmas here at Hogwarts. And on that note, I think we're going to jump into the analysis.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Christmas time is here. It's here. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. And of course, Harry gets a present from Sirius, gets a present from the Dursleys, gets a present from Mrs. Weasley. I mean, it's just such a joyous, fun time, but it's Christmas time. Dobby even gives him a lovely hand-knitted socks, which are so flipping cool. So loads of fun, Christmas merriment, chess, snowball fights, and let's not forget the Yule Ball. I mean, this is the ball to end all balls. But at this, of course, as any high school dance, there's a lot of emotions. There's a lot of, you know, primping, preening, and crying and screaming, fighting between teachers, miscommunications about giant heritage, and much more. A lot happens in this chapter. It is quite long and lengthy, and we are here to dissect the Yule Ball.
Yeah, you know, one thing let's talk about the film real quick. There are two things from the film that
the periwinkle dress is actually pink in the film. What's going on?
That I appreciated and also did not appreciate. First, when Hermione finally has her confrontation with Ron, she says, "Oh, you've ruined everything, Ronald Weasley." In the background, you see other girls on the steps just weeping and sobbing and crying. I really loved that.
Me too.
I thought that was fantastic.
Very authentic.
Very authentic. I remember sitting in my gym with all the little dramatic girls crying on the pullout stands,
yes.
You know, and doing all the stupid things. Like, that was a great little touch.
He was supposed to go with me.
I know. But the thing that I did not appreciate from the film,
okay,
that I did get from the book in this chapter, is the notion that Ron and Harry are miserable, but specifically Ron is miserable because of Victor Krum and Hermione, mm-hmm, and how he feels. In the movie, I didn't get that sense. I got it more just like they didn't want to do anything because they're Ron and Harry.
Yes. And Ron's embarrassed by his outfit, and I just don't want to be doing this.
Yes.
Whereas in this chapter, everything on Ron's mind is, who is Hermione going to the dance,
yes,
and where is Hermione?
Right.
Non-stop. And we're not even in
Non-stop.
Ron's...
Non-stop. Sorry.
Hamilton. It's, you know, we generally are seeing things from Harry's point of view. So this is how much Harry is seeing of Ron bringing up Hermione, you know?
Yeah, and mm-hmm, if this chapter doesn't scream it out to you as loud as you could possibly imagine, if there isn't a red fire alarm going off in your head that... this is when all the things begin with Ron and Hermione. Then
you miss the choo-choo train.
Then, yeah, that train is long gone.
Hogwarts Express is out of the station.
And this is the chapter that cements the fact that this is happening. Whether you like it or not, Ron and Hermione at least are going to be teased, if not definitely a thing. My question to you, Mary, is... are you a Ron and Hermione girl, or were you a Harry and Hermione girl?
Oh, I was a Ron and Hermione girl.
How come?
I mean, there are a lot of things that aren't great about Ron, but for the most part, I'm Ron.
Yes, I know.
And I don't know. I really am the trio. I'm just like, squish all the Gryffindorness together and add as me. I just, you know, I had a really hard time seeing Harry with Hermione in the romantic sense. I know that this is a big divide, and we're not going to delve too much into it.
No, we don't need to be shipping. I don't want to like go crazy, but like just your preference and why.
I see Harry a lot like Frodo, damaged in his soul from holding on to the ring. And I love that Harry ends up with someone who has also been possessed by Voldemort.
Yeah,
I love that he ends up with Ginny, as that is something that she and she alone can also understand.
Yeah, and that they can oddly and weirdly and at worst kind of sickly share together.
They just get it.
Yeah, they get it, and they understand each other's perspective when it comes to that loss of self.
And she's hot.
In the book, she's hot, yeah. I mean, Ginny is...
Go, Harry.
Yeah. you know, it was funny. I was kind of like a... I was definitely a Harry and Hermione guy.
Okay.
I had no particular reason to back it up. It was just... I was convinced that Harry and Hermione were going to end up being a thing. Even though I read the books and all the stuff and all the clues were pointing to Ron and Hermione. I don't know, for some reason.
The author has come out saying that she would have been fine if they ended up together anyway. So, but I can see in the high schoolness of this being 14-year-old,
yeah.
I can see the Harry, the Ron, Hermione. I can see them all. I mean, let's be real, they're 14.
Yeah.
You date someone new every single week, you know?
But yeah, if this chapter doesn't scream out to you that this is coming, then yeah, I mean, it is. And I like how the author uses this chapter as kind of a pivot point, not only for the books, but also a pivot point, I think, in the personalities of her characters.
Yes.
Of the Yule Ball, to me, feels like a coming of age moment. Mm-hmm. Where Hermione kind of somehow blossoms into her own self.
She does.
She has her she's all that moment.
Which is a good and bad thing. You know, we don't want to be saying like, wow, Hermione got dolled up and fixed her teeth and now she's great. Like, she's always been great. But
yeah,
there is something to be said, particularly in this high schooler age where... Sadly, like, you know, looks are a big thing. And when someone does kind of get a glow up, it does make a big difference. You think about all the transformation television shows that we as adults still even watch,
right,
you know?
Right.
So I see it not only, yes, she gets the pretty hair, the smaller teeth, but that helps jettison her confidence. You know, she's not going to be dolled up for the rest of this series. She goes back to being regular Hermione. But I think her being noticed by Victor Krum for who she was when she was just in her regular school robes, sure, with her bigger teeth, with her bushy hair, that for someone to still sit down and say, I see your worth, I see your value, that helps you pull your shoulders back when someone else can finally see you in that way.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That it was actually Victor who gave her this, not just the glow up. Not the shiny hair, but actually Victor saying, I want to go to the dance with you.
Yeah, and when I say that she's all that moment, I mean, obviously I'm referring to the fact that she does get the glow up, right?
And yeah.
I mean, that's obvious.
Kiss me.
That might be the song we play today. I don't know. But more so for the fact, oh, by the way, for those of you in the younger crowd, I would say like 26 and below, go on your... you know, whatever streaming service and go find She's All That. And you'll understand this.
There's a new She's, is it? There's a He's All That.
Yeah, no, don't mess with that garbage. That garbage is gross. I saw it and I it was awful. No.
Anyway.
Lainey Boggs and Harry, Freddie Prinze Jr. Just go for it. What I also mean too, Mary, you, I think you referenced it, is the fact that she is happy.
Yeah.
Right. She is genuinely happy. There's a moment in the book where the author writes something about Hermione where it's something along the lines of Harry noticed her teeth because she was smiling, mm-hmm, and she was smiling in a way that he had never seen before. And
yeah,
how did he not notice this beforehand?
Mm-hmm.
That to me feels more of the kind of transformation that Hermione is mostly aware of for herself.
And here's the thing. I mean, let's just be real. If you have a smile that you are not proud of,
mm-hmm,
and that smile gets altered in a way that does make you proud of it, you feel amazing. You know, I'm someone who I believe that people don't have to wear makeup, but I do believe that makeup can help you feel more confident and creative.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I feel the same way. I had to have braces. My teeth were super spaced out. I looked like Gollum, you know, from Lord of the Rings. So when my braces did come off, I feel like so many of us who've had braces, we've had that moment where, you know, you're sick of it getting food stuck in, and you're sick of having like the spacers and this and that. And then you get them taken off and you can't wait to smile. Yeah. And yes, it's something that is visual. Yes, it's about how you look to other people. And really, that shouldn't be your self-worth. But goodness gracious, we've all had that moment. Whether it's you get your hair done, you feel like $1 million, or you get a great outfit, yep, or you have a big transformation with your body due to lifestyle changes, whatever it is. Like, there are things that when you change the physicality of you can help you get this boost of confidence that just radiates from you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that you can have when you don't have your hair all nice again, or you get food stuck in your teeth again one day. You know, so I think that, because one of the things that stood out to me is on Christmas Day, you know, everybody's having the snowball fights and everything, and everybody's outside. Malfoy makes a joke at Hermione's expense. He calls her, you know, the long molared mudblood. And she says to him, "Hello, Professor Moody." There was no Professor Moody. She was just doing this to bust Malfoy. And yet, right away, there was no hesitancy. There was no flushing. There was no her getting upset. She just confidently gave it right back to Malfoy.
Oh,
and
yeah,
after he freaks out, she goes, "Twitchy little ferret, aren't you?" said Hermione, scathingly. Scathingly. So we had this,
and they went up laughing,
yeah,
you know, up the staircase.
Yeah,
like
we went
awesome
from this like mudblood, you know, making her cry, and you know how terribly he made her feel, and already before she has the whole glam up, before she has the dress, the hair, all this stuff, before she's on the arm of Victor Crumb, she is able to do this confidently to someone who has teased her now for 3.5 years.
Yeah, and she's able to put him in his place, and I got to tell you, that is diabolical what she does to him. Talking about Professor Moody, and obviously we know what Professor Moody did to Draco, turning mm-hmm him into a ferret and whatever. Straight up bodies the kid in front of everybody. And then it just laughs.
Yeah.
Laughs. And it once again proves the fact that Hermione, listen, our trio, Ron, Hermione, and Harry, work best, in my estimation, when they are equals, when they are, I hearken back to the first book when they each had specific skills that got them to go see hashtag spoilers Professor Quirrell at the end of the book.
Babe, we're in book 4. You don't need to do hashtag spoilers.
But they each had specific skills that got yes them to the next task. And they were all equals. Ron recognizes that it's not me, it's not Hermione, it's you. You know, that is a thing, and that is when they work best together. And it's also at this point, I think, in the books here too, Hermione stands up for herself, and she is not what's the line in Hamilton, I am not a maiden in need of defending. She is not a maiden in need of defending. She doesn't need Ron and Harry's help. She's on her own level. And again, she just pushes Draco. She just slams him into the center
flicks
of the planet.
Him away like a little fly. Exactly.
Yes, absolutely.
And of course, this is when right away, Ron is the one that recognizes that her teeth are different. He says, yeah, Hermione, your teeth, while they're different, I've just noticed. And, you know, she explains that she used that little bit of magic, that her parents are going to be upset, but, you know, it's something. So it's interesting, of course, like you said, we're going to be seeing this sprinkles throughout the entire chapter. Ron noticing things about Hermione, not only repeatedly asking her, who are you going with? I mean, at every chance he gets, he tries to catch her off guard. Oh, yeah. And who was it again?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and this is happening. So who are you with again? Like, he tries to catch her, and she sticks to her guns and doesn't let it slip. Why? Fun question. Why doesn't she just tell her best friends who she's going with?
I think she's pissed.
Okay, let's use different language, but continue.
Well, I mean, what
else? I know.
I think she's upset. I think she's upset because...
Disappointed.
No, disappointed is not the emotion that I'm going for.
I love the word disappointed. I feel like it cuts like a knife.
It definitely does, and that's why I'm not choosing that phrase.
Miffed.
No, I think she's perturbed. Angry. Perturbed. Yeah, she's angry. She's perturbed. Okay. You know, you could clearly tell from her admission later on in the chapter that she wanted Ron to ask her.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted it. So not, it's great because there's this great dichotomy that we're seeing. We're seeing Ron so concerned about Hermione's whereabouts and with whom she is going to the Yule Ball. Mm-hmm. At the same time, Hermione does get her she's all that moment. She does get the glow up. She does have the confidence. She does mm-hmm. have this sense of self that is rising to the top of her being that has never been there before. And at the same time, we have Ron going to the Yule Ball with a person he barely knows.
Except she's one of the most beautiful women in the class.
But barely knows,
yep.
Doesn't understand her at all. Like,
doesn't want to dance.
Doesn't want to dance.
Isn't on her level in the same regards of
correct.
Like, interests.
And at the same time, he's also wearing the... he's also wearing these old robes and he's cutting the laces off and he's at his low point in the book so far for the most part, whereas Hermione is probably at her highest point. Mm-hmm. And they both just need to come together to be a perfect synthesis, mm-hmm. but they just aren't. Hermione wants Ron to ask. Ron wants to go with Hermione, but for some reason, there's a lack of communication there. And your question, Mary, is why doesn't Hermione tell Ron? Because she's mad. You didn't ask me, dude. So why am I going to tell you? I also think there's partly some of it is, well, if I told them that I'd be going with Victor Crumb, would they be mad too? And would they even believe me? Would I have to sit here and defend it? What do you think? Great analysis, Mary. Good job. Hey, podcast is over, ladies and gents. Let's go.
I was reading. I thought you were going on your own rant. I didn't know it was going to be a question, so I was reading.
It's okay. You know what?
Truth comes out. How to tell when the hosts aren't listening.
Yep, very, very truth.
Would you like me to repeat the question?
If you would like me to answer it.
Yes, of course I want you. I asked okay. you the question yes. for a reason.
Yes, go for it, Blake. Go for it, Blake.
Do you think she doesn't tell them about Victor because she's mad, but also because they either would be pissed that she's going with him or that they wouldn't believe her and she'd have to defend it the entire time?
Okay. Interesting. Which one do you think?
Okay,
never mind. I will tell you what I think. Fine. I wasn't listening at all. I'm completely agreeing. I was reading Sirius's note to Harry from Pigwidgeon. Okay.
That's my girl.
I think she didn't tell them because she likes Ron. I've definitely gone to a dance with somebody when I like somebody else, and I didn't tell that person that I liked that I was going to a dance with somebody else.
Why?
Because I was embarrassed. And I didn't even know how to do it. And I thought I would just mumble over my words and be like, but actually I wanted to go with you. So.
Wait, what would you be like?
I'm not doing that again. There's a rewind button for you, Blake. But yeah, I think it's because her heart's in two different places. She's flattered by Victor. Victor obviously wanted to ask her. They've got some things in common, the library time, all this kind of stuff. But also she doesn't know how to tell Ron because she's not embarrassed, but she's got all those little butterflies to Ron, you know? How do I say, Victor Crumb, but like I wanted you? So just mixed emotions is what I'm going to go after. And that's just easier to be thinking, well, he'll find out one way. And then because Ron keeps asking her, that makes her feel good. Now it's a little game for her. Each time he asks her, she's thinking, he does like me.
Mm-hmm.
He does like me. And that's what gives her the confidence at the end of this chapter to say, you should have asked me to begin with because you've been showing me this interest this whole chapter. That's what I think. I think it's because she likes him so much.
All I could think of is that scene in, I think it was Half-Blood Prince,
uh-huh.
when Ron's like, a girl couldn't feel all those emotions all at once.
Yes.
Just because you have the emotional range of a teaspoon.
Exactly. So we, of course, get Christmas and we get all the presents and Dobby shows on up and he's the one that's waking up Harry. And Harry is startled. You know, he wakes up and there are these big eyes on him.
Yeah, it's an inch away from his face. He's lucky that Dobby's lucky he didn't get punched into Maz.
Yes, and I just love Seamus Finnegan, because of course we have to remember that Harry shares this room not only with Ron, but with Neville and Seamus and Dean. They're in this big room with all their beds together, and you hear Seamus sleepily say, "Someone attacking you, Harry?" Because remember, just last year was when Sirius Black broke into the castle.
Right, right.
But Seamus sleepily, on Christmas morning, "Someone attacking you, Harry." Like this is just what happens. People break into our room and attack people in their bed, and I'm just going to casually do that. But of course, Seamus wakes up and says, "No, I'm not going back to sleep. There's presents. Like, yeah, yeah. We've got priorities. It is Christmas morning." All these things happen. We get the whole socks and the socks that Dobby had knitted Harry.
Oh, it's so
which,
cute.
You know, I adore that Harry chose to wear Dobby's socks to the Yule Ball. Yeah. Harry wears this, you know, emerald outfit to coordinate and really bring out his eyes. And you'd think, like, you think generally when gentlemen get dressed up, or anyone who gets dressed up more in a suit or a tux for fancy events, they generally wear more dress black socks.
Sure. You
know, just the regular thing. And Harry not only chooses not to wear dress socks, he wears mismatch socks that Dobby made him to the Yule Ball that, like, nobody else is going to see except Mad-Eye Moody, as he pointed out. But how incredible is that? Because probably Harry Potter owns dress socks. If he got the whole kit and caboodle, you know, it's a whole package from Madame Malkin's where he bought the, you know, pretty elmer.
It's
maybe
a thing.
He had emerald green socks. I don't know.
Yep.
But I love that that is what he chose to wear.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you from a guy's perspective, at least my perspective. I can't speak for men as a race. All right.
They're not a race.
Well, you know what I mean. Whatever. Okay. Men as a gender. Okay. I can't. I like being able to wear a nice suit or something formal, but at the same time, wear silly socks.
Yes.
Socks that are, you know, that just stand out because, you know what? Whatever.
I mean, it's a big thing at weddings in particular.
Yeah, sure.
You know, but so I agree. I just think that it's quite cute that he chose that because he has tons of socks, but that's what happened. And then, of course, you know, Dobby is talking about his love of socks. So he throws more socks at Dobby. And Ron wakes up and gives him socks. And Dobby all of a sudden is just being oh so flattering of Ron. "I know you're Harry Potter's best friend, but you gave me socks too." And really, Ron is just giving him gifts that he doesn't want anymore, that his mom sent him for Christmas. But absolutely cute. So then he goes off. And Harry goes through all of his other presents, which I loved. So not only did he have Dobby's old socks, he had a present from the Dursleys, which consisted of a single tissue, which is an all-time low. And then Hermione gave him the Quidditch teams of Britain and Ireland. Ron gave him a bag of dung bombs. Sirius, a handy penknife with attachments to unlock any lock and undo any knot. And this is going to come into use, I'm pretty sure, in the next book. Hagrid, a bunch of sweets with all of Harry's favorites. So we get to go and relive all these sweets as my mouth is now watering. We get the Bertie Bott's Every Flavor Beans, the Chocolate Frogs, the Dribbles Best Blowing Gub, the Fizzing Whisbies. And then, of course, Mrs. Weasley's package, all this cool stuff in which she knitted him a sweater with a dragon because of the horn tail.
Yeah.
So cute. So cute, Mrs. Weasley. But I wanted to take another moment. I mean, I know that there's so much that we have to cover in this chapter, and I'm just nitpicking little things. The Dursleys' gift of a single tissue. Let's delve into this.
Okay.
Why? Why, Blake?
That, you know,
I'll actually listen this time.
All right, that's a good question. Why?
I can delve into my whys if you'd like to think of yours, or if you feel like
you know what, just go ahead because I don't. Okay. I don't.
So first off, why do the Dursleys send a present in general? Why are they even sending presents to him at Christmas?
Because they have to.
Why do they have to?
I guess they don't have to.
So some think that
maybe
whole
they're obligated to.
Yeah, some think that the agreement that Dumbledore has with Petunia to create a home for Harry Potter to make sure that he can stay safe, that maybe keeping a home means not only do you have to have a bed, granted she does a crappy job and she puts him under the stairs for quite some time, but that also maybe you give gifts when someone lives in your home. So maybe this is just their way of doing it. Other people think that all of the owls get sent home, maybe like Christmas Eve, to go get the presents. And that Hedwig's there badgering the heck out of the Dursleys until they throw something at her. Like, just leave, bird. Leave us. Let us be. You know, I'm here for Harry Potter's Christmas present.
Yeah.
and they just throw whatever they can at him. Harry never sends a Christmas present to them. So he can't really complain that he gets bad gifts from them. He doesn't send anything home to them.
That's true. And, you know, and you know, his kid, the Dursley kid does end up having a pigtail. And, you know, the aunt is turned into a balloon. So, like, I'm sure that they're not too excited to give him any presents either at the same time.
And oddly enough, so he got, like, a coin.
Yeah, I got a coin.
And then then he also got, I think it was like a pen or something. It was like something the shape of a stick, and now he gets the tissue.
Yeah.
Some people find it quite interesting that those could potentially be in the shapes of the Deathly
Hallows. Oh, yes. Yeah. Look at you guys. I like that. Hold on. Where is my, there it is.
Nerd! Deep nerd.
That's a deep nerd cut right there.
So there you go. I just wanted to delve into the Dursleys of like why they give gifts, how these gifts are brought, and the different theories that have been spun out as to how this all happens.
You know, I will tell you that I like those random gifts, like the little ones that you get from people that you don't anticipate, like Dobby with the socks. Like that is such a great little insight. And I wish that was something that the movie included. If they're going to include Dobby at all in the film, it should have been this scene.
And this is why, you know, this fleshing out of this universe that happens in Goblet of Fire, this is why this book is so many people's favorite book. Not necessarily are we dealing with Voldemort right now. I mean, let's be real. We're hanging out for many pages at a Yule Ball and at Christmas and stuff. But on the flip side, we're spending more time getting to know all these people. You think about all the character development that we get within this chapter and things with Dobby. Oh, my jaw hurts all of a sudden. Talk, Blake. Ow. Oh, no. What was that? Okay. Take it over. Okay.
You know what that was? That was karma for not listening to me earlier.
Probably was.
You know, when by the little presents that I was referring to, I actually remember at our kids' school, what they do is they hold like this little shopping day for the kids. And the kids get, you know, a certain amount of money. Like we send in like a check for $20 or whatever. And the kids get to buy 4 presents or however many presents that they want with that amount of money for, you know, their loved ones. So, you know, in our case, it'd be Mary, myself, and the grandparents or whatever. And my son, one year, I think it was the first year that he did it. The first year he did it, he came home with a pen. And it was a Patriots pen.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have it to this day.
Aww.
And I love that Patriots pen. And it's not because he got it randomly or whatever. And he came up to me and he gave it to me. And he said, Daddy, because I know you love football. And he gave me a Patriots pen.
Yeah.
And man, how cute is that?
It's sweet.
And like, whatever, it's a pen. It doesn't matter. But like my son knows me and took time to think about it and recognized it and said, oh, my dad would like that because it says the Patriots.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to get that for him. Like, how cool is that? Like,
I love it.
So I love those little gifts and the sentimentality behind it. Though I'm told this year, his gift that he got for me this year
is for him.
It's more for him in this instant, but
yeah,
it's okay. Hopefully one day he listens to this like 20 years from now. All right. Is your jaw okay now?
I'm okay. Yeah, that was weird.
Do I have to stop vamping now?
No, we're good. We're good. So of course, like Christmas Day goes through. I was mixing up. I was calling the Snowball Day Christmas Day. Sorry for those of you who are like, Mary, that Malfoy thing didn't happen at Christmas. It was Christmas Eve. So here we are.
Because you know we're going to get 6 emails about that.
Clarified it now. Hermione goes to start getting ready at 5 because the Yule Ball starts at 8, which can I tell you, that is late for me to be eating dinner. Because that's when dinner starts. That in the book versus the movie, they have nice whole dinner for the Yule Ball.
Not everyone's a hobbit like you.
I know. Like where's second breakfast and 11 Z's and everything. So she goes in to go start getting ready at 5 o'clock, which I got to be real, I would have been inside by 1.
And you still wouldn't have been on time.
No, exactly. So Hermione taking 3 hours to shower, blow dry her hair, get that bippity boppity boo treatment, you know, for the little updo, paint her nails.
The teeth.
Get in her teeth were already done.
Oh, they were already done.
Yeah. Okay. Get a little bit of makeup, you know, zip Padma inside her dress, you know, like you have to do it together. You have to be together. You know, Harry wondered why all the girls walk together because they need to help unzip. Okay.
You need four hands.
Yes, to get into some of these outfits. Or then, God forbid, you forget to put on your shoes and you can't bend over that far. Gosh. So, the fat lady, I loved this. The fat lady is, you know, obviously the person you have to speak to get into the Gryffindor common room. And she's having a grand old time. She's extremely tipsy. Empty boxes of chocolate liqueurs littering the bottom of her picture.
That brings me to a question. How is she getting all this booze?
There's probably a painting with like the god, the goddess of wine. What's that one? I don't know.
Is it like a painting like of a warehouse full of like full of like liqueurs and
I would do it.
And Sam Adams.
Yeah.
Sorry, I have to play this.
Your cousin from Boston.
And then the boys go get dressed, and this is when Ron starts to get crabby. Now he's, you know, he's had fun asking Hermione, who you going with, played games, did all this stuff, and now he has to put on his robes. And he gets to see, he's changing in the same room, once again, with those other four boys, and he's seeing all of their outfits look the same, and he's in this shoddy, hand-me-down robes. He even tries to use a severing charm. Except now it's just, you know, with tattered. And they all go downstairs. And Dean makes a mark that they have the, how'd you guys get the best looking girls in the year? To which Ron gloomily replies, animal magnetism. Which I just thought was so funny because it's him trying to be funny. It's him trying to be like, oh yeah, animal magnetism. Like, obviously we got the hottest girls. But he can't say it happily because in his mind, obviously, it's not the hottest girl. He's realizing he's got the hots for Hermione.
Yeah. And I think also part of it, too, is like he's in these robes that suck.
Yeah.
Like, I'll tell you, if I'm going to go to a party where all these people are going to be there and like this is the first party
matters.
Of that ilk.
Yes.
In however many years, I want to look nice. And you start combining the whole Hermione thing with the fact that you got these dress robes that you don't like, you don't look good in.
I mean, you didn't even ask Padma Patil. Harry asked for you.
Right. So later on, you know, Ron is pretty, I don't want to say awful, but just insensitive.
Oh, he's a terrible date.
But he's also pretty insensitive to Hermione.
Yes.
And
Ron is not a good character. Not the strongest character moments.
Do you give him a little grace?
Once again, 14. And I know that there's young people who are 14 and below even listening to this. Things happen at that age, at your first dance. You act selfishly. You can't see past your own feet. Your emotions are raging. So I'm not saying shame on Ron. He's a terrible human being. Did he act particularly well in this chapter? No. Are there moments that we can look back on, particularly in our youth when we were stubborn and focused on ourselves and crabby against the world because we felt like it was so unfair? Yes.
Yeah, that was me last week.
Yeah, right? So, you know, we get everybody seeing Parvati and we get to see Padma and they're dressed ever so beautifully. And still, Ron is asking, like, where's Hermione? Where's Hermione? They go on into the Great Hall. We get to see everything that's absolutely beautiful. We get to see Fleur Delacour, who is with Roger Davies, the Ravenclaw Quidditch captain, who they end up snogging later.
So much snogging.
Even with all of her complaining, he doesn't care.
She's part Veela.
Still, Fleur Delacour walks by. He still asks, where is Hermione?
Yeah. So, like, that goes back, or at least it, you know, rhymes with the whole attraction part of Fleur and the fact that he fell so quickly for her. And yet when she walks by again, there's absolutely zero effect.
Yeah.
You know, I think that is a great recognition on the author's part from her previous interaction between the two.
Yeah. We get then all the champions are called. This is where Harry gets to see Hermione for the first time. We go through this beautiful description of Hermione is Parvati looks at Hermione in unflattering disbelief. She wasn't the only one either. There's all the girls of the Victor Krum fan club who are just being ever so cruel with their facial expressions showing their disgust. Pansy Parkinson gaped at her as she walked by with Malfoy, and even he didn't seem to be able to find an insult to throw at her. Yeah. Ron, however, walked right past Hermione without looking at her. He's that lust in knowing what his image of Hermione looks like. So, of course, the dancing begins. And I loved how, you know, all the people start to, start to congregate together.
Yeah.
And Karkaroff realizes that Victor Krum is dancing with Hogwarts champion or champion's bestie. You know what I mean? And I loved that little interaction because obviously there's that head table where all the champions get to sit with the headmasters and the judges. And Victor starts to tell Hermione a little bit, oh, we love to fly in the mountains and the lakes and everything. And Karkaroff gets really upset.
Yeah. And he's like, don't you keep, stop talking, will you? Stop talking because I don't want you to give out all the secrets and then people are going to be able to find us. What are you doing? I also think that this part of Karkaroff, you know, since, you know, hashtag Death Eater, that he might be a little upset with Victor Krum.
Oh, yes.
For choosing, a mudblood here a little bit.
I'd agree.
You know, the wizarding world is a very interesting world.
I'm glad you've come to that conclusion now that we're midway through book four.
Hey, that's a hot take right there.
Yeah.
Really, that's Chernobyl take. It's an interesting world because there are, as magical and fun and beautiful and how much it inspires the goodness in all of us and the setting of it all, there's also these little bits of reality where imperfection and we can recognize that their world isn't a far off land. It's not a galaxy far, far away. Mm-hmm. It lives in parallel to our world. In fact, they're intertwined far more than we probably recognize.
Yes.
You know, in universe. Having said that, the fact that Karkaroff can hold potentially at least something against Hermione for her being a mudblood. Mm-hmm. And also at the same time, as we later come to find out, there is this bias against giants or half giants. And even when Hagrid talks to Madame Maxime about being a half giant, whether or not she is or isn't, she summarily denies it.
Correct.
And denies her own self. Maybe because she doesn't want to accept it, or maybe because she can't accept it. Mm-hmm. So I like how that there are these bits that, though this world is magical, there are parallel similarities.
Agreed. And we really get to start having that more fleshed out in this book. And as we go forward, even just the economic disparity, like, you know, that we see with Ron being embarrassed of his clothes and how that starts to really sour what could have been a really fun evening for him.
Yeah.
Mr. Crouch is not at this event. And instead we've got Percy Weasley, which I got to say this time reading through the series, I've got a little soft spot for Percy. He gets the short end of the stick a lot of the times. He does make some really poor choices. But on the flip side, you know, right now this kid's just trying to get his foot into his career and he's seen as a total nerd by his family and his loved ones. And truth be told, like, Percy right now is doing a good job for his career.
He did get a
promotion. But this is what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, you're reading it through the Harry Potter eyes where Harry's like, oh gosh, if I need to listen to Cauldron Reports, I'm going to, you know, be so bored. But when you think about the friends of yours, particularly those of us who are adults, who have those friends who may have been super nerdy in school, but who are now flourishing in their careers, are being recognized by like business bureaus or whatever for their accolades. Yeah. And you sit there and you're like, yeah, you know what? They were really determined. And so I'm reading this right now, being proud of Percy. There are going to be other moments where I'm not proud of Percy, but I feel like he doesn't get that from his parents. He doesn't get that from his siblings. And this is a big deal that he is promoted. Yes, Mr. Crouch, like,
Mr. Crouch doesn't even know his name.
But how many people have bad bosses? Okay, I'm just saying I'm proud of Percy that he's sitting here and he is proud of himself.
Well, all right. Is it good that he got a promotion?
Yes.
Am I happy for him? Sure.
Does he want to have a stable career after living in like economic turmoil with all of his family? Does he want to do something that changes the world?
Sure.
Good for you, Percy.
Okay, great for you. All right,
in this chapter.
You get a little bit of a clap.
That's all I'm asking for.
I'm going to give you the Dumbledore clap, okay?
Yes.
But here's the thing. The author puts in this mention that after he says he got the promotion, it might as well have been him been saying that he was the emperor of the world or something to that effect. That is very specific, that descriptor. And that's not colored by Harry's judgment. That is, I think, an unbiased account of the way Percy is representing himself. That feels to me that it comes directly from the author as opposed to Harry's POV. That said, for him, Percy, to be that arrogant and to be that... I'll just stick with arrogant. For him to be that arrogant coming off of him getting a promotion, that's a dingleberry move.
Okay, well, as a middle child myself, you know that his mom didn't send him a cake. You know his mom didn't send him a congratulatory letter with like little exploding glitter in it when he got his promotion. So Percy, toot your own horn.
Exploding glitter.
Toot your own horn, Percy. I'm here for you, and all middle children are here for you right now, giving the Dumbledore weak clap. We're here for you, Percy, in chapter 23. We're going to change our opinion of you in a little while, but it's okay.
Well, you know, it's no coincidence, Mary, that we're halfway through this book, right? We're halfway done. And as we mentioned earlier in this chapter seems to be the pivot point. It seems to be the pivot point not only for this book, but also, I think, for the series in general. I mean, we talked about the stepping off point in Azkaban, like the way that Potter as a series starts to mature. But this right here, this chapter, is a perfect amalgam of all things Harry Potter going forward, but also Harry Potter in the past. We have the school dance. Yee-wee! Hogwarts! We have all of the emotions being shared between Ron and Hermione. We have the note to Sirius. From Sirius, you gotta stay clear-headed here. We have the stuff with Draco and coming after Hermione. Then we also have even Dumbledore recognizing the mysterious nature of Hogwarts and how
he... Dropping more about the Room of Requirements.
Yes, exactly. Yes. We have a recognition that he's like, I was just in this room and had all these great toilets in it. It was awesome.
And here's how it basically works for anyone who ever wants to go to the Room of Requirement in the next several years.
It doesn't specifically say that, but the author drops it in there so that when we do get to the Room of Requirement and we do put a name on it, if you're reading with intent, you can say, oh my gosh, that was the room that Dumbledore
was
talking
bathroom.
About. And on top of all of that, we have the scene with Karkaroff and Snape when they're talking about
the Dark Mark.
The Dark Mark. And they don't put necessarily a name to it. And you don't know what a Dark Mark is yet because as a tattoo, because you just haven't had experience with it. But that is coming in here. And this is the pivot point. This is the transformational point for this book, but also, I think, a transformational moment for our power trio,
agreed,
who are all working on the same level right now at this very moment. And I'm so impressed that the author, in one chapter, can weave so many plot points, so many different themes, so many different directions, and propel us not only for the rest of this book, but also for the rest of the series.
Mm-hmm.
The foundation upon which the rest of the series is built can be traced back, I think, to this chapter.
It's interesting because Voldemort isn't mentioned in this chapter. You know, we've got people who are former Death Eaters here. We've got little inklings. But we do have the undercurrents. We have the undercurrents of the inequality with people who are different. We have, whether it's financially or blood status or, you know, giants or anything like that, we've got the differences between the different schools and the beliefs and the snootiness to that. We've got people who are trying to better themselves and trying to be seen and recognized by others.
Yep.
So, you know, it's interesting, as I said, there's no necessarily mention of Voldemort in this happy, joyful time, but we do get the little sprinklings that are important. So, for example, I'm afraid to say Mr. Crouch isn't well. Not well at all. Hasn't been right since the World Cup. Hardly surprising, overwork. He's not as young as he was, though still quite brilliant, of course. The mind remains as great as it ever was. But the World Cup was a fiasco for the whole ministry. And then Mr. Crouch suffered a huge personal shock with the misbehavior of that house elf of his, Blinky, or whatever she was called. Interesting that he doesn't recognize her name when Crouch doesn't even recognize his own name. Yeah. Naturally, he dismissed her afterwards. But as well to say, he's getting on. He needs me looking after. And I think he's found a definite drop in his home comfort since she left, yada, yada, yada. So it's interesting because here they are at the head table, you know, near Dumbledore himself, yeah. who obviously knows that Mr. Crouch isn't at the table, isn't doing well. We've got his son, faux Mad-Eye Moody, just dancing around using his, you know, see-through eye, checking out Harry Potter socks. So once again, you know, when you sit back and you look things through a different lens of Dumbledore, yes, he's cute. And he's like, oh, Cockerolf, we're all fine. We can share each other's secrets. But yet also you sit there and you're wondering, like, how much is Dumbledore starting to look into the fact that Barty Crouch is missing? You know, that he's not here right now. And, you know, these different elements are starting to line up. So I just think it's... I think it's an interesting predicament, like you said. Things do start to get into motion.
Yep.
Then we have the situation outside. We're going to, of course, find out that Rita Skeeter is sitting here as the little beetle, yep. listening in to everything that's going on. Fun thing, Hermione and Crumb are sitting down, and she's explaining to him how to say her name.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
And he starts calling her Hermione.
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 And I feel like this was the author. Because
It was confirmed that this was the author helping, because by this point, a lot of people had been reading Harry Potter and kept saying, we don't know how to say this character's name.
Yeah.
And so she had to have someone in the text actually like spell, you know, sound it out exactly so that the readers knew how to properly say Hermione.
Oh, man, that's great. And it's at least a fun way to, because you don't really ever hear, I don't think you actually hear Crumb talk a whole ton at all in the book prior to. So it's fun to hear him not necessarily know how to pronounce it, but not actually be able to physically pronounce it. Like it's the accent and all that other stuff. And it's an interesting way to get to for the author to inject her own self and her own guided touch to the reader, but in a fun expository way. You know, that is a Harry Potter equivalent of Dino DNA. And
yes.
I really like that a lot. That was a great touch.
Agreed.
Really great touch.
We wrap things up with Ron and Hermione having their little spat, him saying, you know, you're fraternizing with the enemy and he only wants to get to know you because you're Harry Potter's friend. And, you know, we've delved a lot into the Ron and Hermione aspect of this.
Before you get into that, do you think Ron is doing that to make himself feel better? Like, is he trying to put Hermione down so that he can feel...
He's trying to put Victor down so that Hermione stops dating Victor, in my opinion. You know, why are you doing this? Well, mind you, Ron also asked out Fleur Delacour. Like, he wanted to go out with another one of the champions who could have just as easily asked him for tips from Harry.
Right.
So it's totally not fair whatsoever. But I think he is just trying to poo-poo Victor. Why would you go with him?
He also says you're going with the enemy. Like, you... Hermione are choosing to go to this dance with the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're right. He is putting down Victor because maybe he's trying to curse Harry or he's trying to get intel or whatever. But you are bringing him into our circle. Why would you choose to do that? That to me is Ron putting Hermione down very specifically.
Well, Ron isn't very nice in this chapter.
No, he's not.
He doesn't behave that well.
I think he's a little hangry.
He is very hangry.
There's no mention of him eating.
He needed to speak to the plate. I need a second helping. Which I just love that. To me, that's like DoorDash and Uber Eats right now. You know, putting it in your phone. I would like pad thai, and then it magically appears on your doorstep. That's the equivalent right now of Dumbledore speaking to his plate and imagining it.
So he doesn't turn into Betty White.
Yes, you're right. You're right. We do get the little casual mention of Fred and George going after Ludo Bagman again, talking about business stuff, but maybe Percy kind of poo-pooing it. And then we get to go outside. And we are going to revisit a little bit of what we see with Snape actually in the Pensieve later on. So it is interesting that we're going to call back to this scene. And Blake, yes. Of course, having not read The Goblet of Fire, when you revisit this, you'll be like, oh, yeah, that's what you were talking
about.
Yeah,
and here's another thing, too. As I said about Ron and Hermione, this chapter, if like, if you didn't get it by this point, yeah. Then if you don't get the fact that the author is intentionally making you distrust Karkaroff by this point, then you're not reading with intent. Because the mere fact that she is associating Karkaroff with Snape, of all people, mm-hmm. in such a mysterious way, referring to things that, you know, we don't necessarily know about as of yet, mm-hmm. within story,
yep.
Then you've missed the boat. She is intentionally putting Karkaroff in the same plane as Snape and hoping to get your distrust. Though I will say I live for the idea of Snape having this conversation, just casually walking. And as he's casually walking, talking about the Dark Mark and Voldemort and everything, he's just ripping apart rose bushes, mm-hmm. trying to catch kids.
Snogging.
Like, just with no emotion, just be like, yeah, so Voldemort, you know, like, mm-hmm. oh my God, that, I love that idea. That is great.
We get this beautiful insight into the wizarding world a little bit more, you know, because Ron grew up with it the entire time. He has to explain to Harry what they overhear about Hagrid being half giant, which once again, Harry's kind of always assumed, you know, but he didn't know that it had a bad connotation to sure. it. And Ron is able to fill us in the dino DNA.
Yep.
Oh, a lot of the dragons, the giants are now gone. And yeah, they're not necessarily well kept. And they're kind of like trolls in that aspect.
They were vicious and whatever.
Yeah, all these different things that happen. And then we get to the night is ending. Harry and Ron, they're both upset. The girls that they like are obviously not dancing with them. Things aren't going that well. And Harry gets to see Cho and Cedric walking away. They're going back to their own respective dormitories, supposedly.
Yeah.
They may be going to snog.
No, they're going to the rose bushes.
Yeah. What is left after Snape blasted them away. And Cedric pulls Harry aside and says, listen, you helped me out with the dragon egg. I want to help you out. You know the golden egg. Does yours wail when you open it? Well, take a bath with it. Take the bath and take the egg with you and mull things over in the hot water. It'll help you think. Trust me. Use the prefix bathroom, fourth door, on the left of the statue of Boris the Bewildered on the fifth floor. Passwords, pine fresh. Gotta go. And that's what he does. He tells him this, like, super confusing. Take it to this bath, fifth floor, Boris, yeah. blah, 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 pine fresh, all this stuff. How do you feel about him giving Harry these bits of information versus saying, open it in the water, it's mermaids talking. It's mermish. Like, Harry specifically said, it is going to be dragons. Why couldn't Cedric just say, we have to be underwater for an hour with the mer people? Listen to your egg underwater.
Well, because...
Why does he have to give him this, like, riddle?
All right, well, so I will say this. I like how the film handled this a lot better.
Okay.
Maybe it was because it's my, I think, newly reignited obsession with Robert Pattinson.
Just take it to the bath and mull it over a little bit with his little swagger and sway where he's like, oh, I can't let my friends know what I'm saying, but I'm Robert Pattinson, so I'm going to do this in a really nice way.
Say it out loud.
Agreed. Like, he's not with a lot of people. Cho is right there. He could have simply said in the book, XYZ, Harry, bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Harry didn't say, hey, Cedric, it's going to be dragons, and this is how you defeat the dragons.
Harry didn't know.
No, I know. I'm saying Harry does end up telling Cedric it's dragons, right? But he doesn't say, well, this is what you got to do. He just says, hey, it's dragons.
Why couldn't Cedric say you have to be underwater for an hour?
He does, essentially. He says, go take a bath with it.
Doesn't. Says
he doesn't tell him how to solve it.
Mysterious riddle.
He doesn't tell him how to solve the whole thing. He just says, go take a bath. And that's equivalent to what Harry did for him.
Harry told him everything he knew. Everything Harry knew.
Yeah, which was dragons.
Yes.
And the information was equitable.
Harry could have said, go into the woods and listen for roars. Hey, Cedric, go into the woods, use this password, go 5 steps to the left and then 10 steps to the right and listen. He like, said that's the equivalent.
Have you ever seen How to Train Your Dragon? I feel like the information that was passed back and forth between the two is equitable. I like the fact that Harry is so upset about Cho, and he refuses, as we later come to find out, he refuses to listen to, you know, our Pat's advice.
Cedric Diggory.
And he just doesn't do it because he's pissed. And I don't blame him. But I'm a little take cornered. I'm a little take cornered on my Hufflepuff take. However, I might be able to do a take retraction because I'm liking Cedric.
I know. I'm happy. We've all been waiting for this moment.
I'm not saying it's a full take redaction, but you know what? It's a step backwards.
Okay.
Okay. You know, it's a step away. It's a take step away.
Nice. We're all confused, but we're happy.
Oh, man. All right. Anything else you wanted?
That's it.
How about Harry? Harry.
What about Harry?
Knowing that Hermione is right.
Oh, I'm proud of him. At the end of the chapter.
Yeah, like, that's good.
This is when I picture the just befuddled looking, daydreaming look of Dan Radcliffe. You know, he does it so well where he's like, this is not my problem.
Yeah.
And I know Hermione's right, but Ron's my friend now, and I'm not going to mess that up.
Nope.
And this is between them. As Hermione would say, I am not an owl.
Yep.
I'm not getting involved.
Not my chair, not my problem.
I'm just going to sit here and eat some bird bots and call it a day.
Your father said something to me yesterday. He goes, not my circus, not my monkeys. And I thought that was one of the funniest things I've heard in a long time. And you know what? Yeah, that's what Harry's doing. Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Love it.
All right, cool.
Well done,
you ready
Harry.
For a different perspective?
Nope, but I will be.
Let's do it. You get a brief 10 seconds to figure it out.
Okay.
Here we go.
Holy cricket. You're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
I'm Roger Davies. Roger Davies.
Who are you?
Are you kidding me? I am the Ravenclaw Quidditch captain.
You are a jabroni.
And the new boyfriend of Fleur Delacour.
Oh, yeah. No. Just because she goes kissing you doesn't mean that you're the boyfriend.
It's not kissing. We're going steady and we're snogging until Professor Snape bippity boppity booed that. But we found a corner. Don't you worry.
Yeah.
I am in love.
Did you get any thorns when he blew up the rose bush on you?
I don't even know. I'm just so happy.
You're tingling with excitement.
And, you know, I have decided that all of the food at Hogwarts is the worst, Burr. It's absolute worst.
Why?
I don't know. I just magically have been deciding that because Fleur was telling him the whole night, Blake.
Oh, okay. All right. Gotcha.
Where have you been?
Gotcha.
What were you reading, Blake? And the decorations next year. I need to be on the decoration committee for the Yule Ball.
I think you should be on the potty planning committee.
I will. Totally. And I will make sure that there are ice sculptures of Fleur everywhere. I think I'm going to propose.
You know, Roger.
I may or may not have told her that I'm an astronaut. I don't even know what that is because I'm pretty sure I'm a pureblood. But man.
Raj, let me tell you something, Raj.
She's going to marry me one day.
Raj.
She's going to marry me.
I got to break it to you, Raj.
Yeah? She's so great.
To my knowledge,
I do a good job dancing with her?
This is something that I heard.
I feel like I'm floating.
I can't say that this is 100% true.
Is half of my face scorched? I can't feel it.
I heard that she was a Vila. Or she was at least part Vila. And, you know, floating on a cloud feeling you're getting.
I love vegans.
That's
okay?
Just pheromone.
I love them. You know? I'm here for it.
You know, a healthy lifestyle. That's what it is, really.
I'll get a bumper sticker. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just so happy.
Support your farmer. Your local farmer.
Your local farmer. That's it. I'm Roger Davies.
Roger.
Yeah.
You know what? This is a pleasant surprise.
You think she's going to marry me?
Yeah.
I was thinking, you know what I'm going to do tonight?
What's that?
I've got a really great smart idea.
Okay, what do you
got? I'm so in love with her. I'm going to go carve her initials. I'm going to go carve FD and RD onto the willow tree. I think that's a great idea.
You know what? I probably wouldn't do that if I were
go.
You.
Gotta go. Bye.
Yeah, you know what, Raj? Why don't you go get some sense in that? And Roger died.
And the same. End.
Oh, good job, Mary. Hey, very good job.
I just feel like we talked about everybody else so much in great detail. We missed poor Raj. I mean, this was the highlight of his life.
Yeah.
You know those people that peak in high school?
Oh, yeah.
Roger Davies.
Yep, Roger Davies. That time I kissed Flor Delacour, you know.
Until I was blown up.
Yeah.
Until I became Two-Face. Roger, what happened to your face? Well,
let me tell you.
I was snogging a Vila. Like, you know when you go to college and you have to give two truths and a lie?
Yeah, yeah.
I may or may not have got my face scarred while I was snogging half a Vila.
Not half a Vila.
Her toes? Possibly. Possibly the bottom half of a Vila. No, someone who was half Vila. Or a quarter Vila if it was just her grandmother. Rich half. The toes. Anyway, the end.
Hey, you could be a foot guy. Some guys are into
feet. We're moving on. We don't like the foot conversation.
All right. Are you ready for some emails and questions?
Yes.
All right, here we go.
Oh, Miles.
This one comes from Allie. She says, hi, guys. Loving the podcast.
Hi,
I'm
Allie.
Also following along with the audiobooks. I feel like adult Voldemort has all the trappings of a villain. Ugly, tall, snake eyes, etc. So while he is very creepy and gross in the graveyard scene, it's also predictable because he is so villain-like. Something I like to do is imagine Voldy as the young Tom Riddle as he delivers his lines and battles Harry. It's so much more chilling, like a murderer next door kind of thing, because you see this from a normal-looking person doing such evil and vile things. You guys should try it at the same time.
Ooh.
Yes.
That's
yes,
up Blake's alley.
That's,
it's like a Dexter. Like
Dexter.
If Dexter was grown up Voldemort.
Yes. I you know what? My first thought of as I was reading Allie's words was Hannibal Lecter.
I don't think he's attractive.
No, well, no. In the books, he's a very attractive man.
Well, I didn't read the books.
I know you didn't. But I'm saying, but even Silence of the Lambs, Anthony Hopkins is a good looking guy on Silence of the Lambs.
Nope, not my type. Looks like Mr. Frog.
All you Anthony Hopkins fans, please entitle your email to Mary and not
Blake. I'm much more of an Oliver Wood type of person.
Yeah.
Okay, continue. Next one.
The next one comes from Kylie. She
Anthony
says, hello,
Hopkins.
Mary and Blake. Of course, I love all of your podcasts. Thank you. Go to maryandblake.com to listen
she
to all
She does, Blake. She loves all of them.
No, I'm just saying, not you, Kylie. I'm saying for the royal you.
Okay.
For the whole.
Royal, your
the,
highness.
The
Okay, land the plane.
Okay.
We know, Blake. We know.
Yes, Mary.
Land the plane, Helen.
Unfortunately, I couldn't go episode by episode with The Last Kingdom, so I had to bidge. I can't wait for Outlander cast to come back in 2022, and I'm still trying to get through the first book. Man, are those books huge. Anyway, for Harry Potter, I just listened to the podcast for books 1 through 3, but I'm reading chapter by chapter with you in book 4. This past week, I was in California soaking in Disneyland and Universal.
Jelly.
AKA the Potter world. Oh man, am I jealous of you? I asked my friends if there is any expansion or life story from any Harry Potter characters, whose would you choose? There was a variety of answers from Dumbledore, Mad-Eye, Hermione, Snape, and Draco. My vote has always been for Lupin, though. You get a look into his life as a werewolf, but you also get many of the main characters within the Harry Potter universe. He is a marauder. He's a teacher. He is a part of the order. He gets married to Tonks, which I forget because the movie kind of sort of slides over it. And I could go into more of who the story would connect with, but I'm not going to. Mary, my question for you is if you would like an expansion, upon whom would you like it?
I would like Sirius Black. For the same reasons. We got the marauders. We got the whole hanging out in Hogwarts. But I also want to know what it was like in Azkaban.
Interesting.
And I want to know what he did in Rio. You know, when he was on vacation.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
You know.
Does
he play the piano? I don't know.
he's a dueling pianist playing piano in Rio.
He's got a piano at Grimworld Place. Is that what he did? Did Creature teach him? I don't know.
For my answer, I'm in the same vein as you, Mary. I kind of would want to know more about Regulus.
Oh, I thought you were going to go for Lucius.
Lucius would be interesting.
Like, does he belong to a country club? What do they do those quiet years? How about Narcissa?
No, if I'm going to go that route, I want Bellatrix.
She's boring.
No, she's great.
Not. She's not. But we already know Bellatrix.
I know, but I would want
more. You want
more
like youth Bellatrix?
Yeah, I want crazy Bellatrix. Okay. Like, what
there's
actually
a tick. There's a TikTok House of Black.
Oh, I know. Yeah, yeah, Royal House of Black. But I think my first choice would be Regulus. Like, okay. I want to see him in the glory of Slytherin.
Regulus would make a great Rogue One. You know?
Yes.
Like, it's just standalone. You know it's not going to end well.
No, it's going to end wicked bad. All the main characters are going to die.
Yeah.
And, you know, hashtag spoilers. But it's going to be great. Yeah. And you just call the movie Regulus. That's all you need to do. And all the Harry Potter nerds would flip out because you get to see him go from being like so Slytherin to suddenly recognizing, woo, wait a second.
And was he at school with the Marauders just a few years earlier?
Right.
And, you know, so.
And how did this turn happen?
Did he play Quidditch against James?
Yeah. Like,
I don't know.
And then I think Regulus is the best. We got to pitch this. We got to go to Warner.
I mean, you can start a fanfic, Blake.
We got to go to WB and be like, "Yo, we got a Regulus movie." And all you do is just call it Regulus and all the Harry Potter nerds will freak out. That's what you got to do. Or better yet, go to HBO Max and you make it a streaming show.
Okay, continue.
That's what I'm saying. That's my choice. And she says health, happiness, and stats are for nerds. This one comes from Dejana, I think. Mm-hmm. Hi, Mary and Blake. My name is Dejana. I shall enjoy your trying to pronounce it, by the way. LOL. I originate from Starkville, Mississippi, but I have lived in Arizona for 5 years. I'm a 24-year-old Hufflepuff and Gryffindor, as I call it. And that's what Mary is. Engaged to a Gryffindor, whom is also a Gryffindor. I had a Harry Potter and Chamber of Secrets VCR tape as a kid, but I was never introduced to the Harry Potter universe until middle school when I accidentally read the series backwards in the span of a week. And I've been obsessed with it since.
So confusing.
Wow. Growing up in the South in a place that was very southernly, Dudley-ish with a cup of Christian values, I didn't have many people to celebrate Potter with until I met my adorable fiancé. She made my Hufflepuff heart explode when I finally got to discuss with her my love of the puffs and foods. Though, this may please Blake, two of my best friends are Slytherins. Yeah.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
I've listened to your Potterverses before, but I was never a lover of podcasts beforehand. However, your podcast, I listened to everything you have to offer in the Potterverse in a week and a half.
Oh my gosh.
I'm now losing my mind as I wait for the new episode of The Order of Phoenix. You two are phenomenal, and I love your points on the books and movies so
much.
Thank you. I actually commented on this super long paragraph under one of your YouTube posts recently, blah, blah, blah. All that drawl being said, I have a question as I listen again from the beginning. I have a question here, and this is what it is. Since Hagrid is the keeper of keys, does that mean every key in Harry's broom ride to stop Quirrell in the first book were keys that Hagrid lost? Also, if you could create any spell, what would be its backfire? So all the keys that were in that room, are these keys that Hagrid lost, or are these just like random keys that are just sitting around the castle?
As Hagrid is my love,
yes,
my numero uno, I'm going to say that he wouldn't have lost that many keys. Key here or there. Yeah. I don't think he would have lost that many keys. So I am saying they're just spare keys and extra keys made up for this.
All right. If you could make a spell, Marvin, what would it be? What would you...
Or what would it backfire?
Hey, what would the backfire? Yeah.
I don't know.
I think I would want somebody's skin to burn off.
Ew.
Just to see a skeleton.
Oh, I was just thinking I want a spell that makes me not thirsty. Well, guys, if you ever wanted to know what the inside of our brains are like, this just... I'm thirsty all the time. Aguamenti doesn't work. Like, someone's skin burn off. And I'm like, oh, you know what's really annoying? Man, you're thirsty. You don't have, like, a cup. You're stuck in traffic. Burn off skin. Gosh. Move on, you Slytherin. There you go. Merry Christmas.
Oh my God, my stomach hurts.
Burn off your skin.
I think I played too much Mortal Kombat as a kid.
I don't think I want to be in the same room as you right now.
Oh, man.
I need a drink.
Oh, that was awesome. All right.
For anyone wondering, I usually have two drinks next to me as I podcast. And Blake does not have a lighter, so that's good. Okay, Blake.
I thought by backfire, she meant like you tried to do something, but like the opposite effect.
Okay. And well, like, you know what? We just solved that question. I'm thirsty. You burn your face off. The end. If you do the I'm thirsty spell with Ron's broken wand, you burn your
face. You're going to burn your face. Oh my God, that was.
Let's go. I'm waiting.
I'm sorry. I'm just
breathe.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, gotta catch my breath there. Okay. You ready to close the show?
Yeah, I sure am.
All right, let's do it. You know what, Dejan, just because, hopefully I'm pronouncing your name right, I apologize if I'm not, but listen, just because you gave me such a laugh and how great that was, and because you listened to all of our podcasts in a week and a half,
and
it's Christmas, and I'm feeling given.
Yeah.
I want you to send me an email, and I want you to tell me that it's you, obviously, and we're going to make it so that you get any Harry Potter item from the Mary and Blake store sent to you for Christmas, okay?
Yeah.
So thank you for giving me that good laugh. Or at least facilitating the laugh. And Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. And I'm feeling good today. So
you sure are.
I'm feeling like $1 million right now. So.
Awesome. Well, we want to thank MailBW9394 on Apple Podcasts, who said, absolutely love. Thanks, Mary and Blake, for doing a podcast for Harry Potter. I had come across Potterverse when I was craving Harry Potter, and I won't listen to anything else. You guys are so funny, and you make my day. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Mel B. We appreciate you and everyone else who's taken the time to write us a review in Apple Podcasts. Give us those 5 stars and a couple of sentences. They're like a little hug to Blake and I during these cold, chilly months of winter. So happy winter, happy solstice, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Festivus, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy
Hanukkah. Don't forget that.
Hanukkah already happened. Well, belated Hanukkah. Yeah, happy birthday for anyone who has a birthday in 2021 and 2022. Happy birthday.
Just happy Flag Day.
Happy everything. Happy Harry. Mischief managed.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.